Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My name is Dave Hanratty, and there will be no encore. Welcome to the music podcast of Records.
Record.
That's right. That's sonic architect Adam Shanahan,
everybody. Hi, everybody. How are we doing?
He's back, and so are we. Yeah. This week on the show, and very soon, actually, we'll be sitting down with Luke and Dave from Overhead the Albatross, one of our favorite bands. Go back a long way with the show. Go back a long way in my music career as a journalist as well, so, and as a fan, you know?
They're fantastic. I was introduced to Overhead by you, actually. I had never seen them before. I'd definitely heard of them being around, but I'd never actually like taken the time until the recommendation came my way from you. So I have a lot to thank you for. We went to see them, of course.
Last year.
It was great.
Yeah,
it was very loud. Again, one of the best gigs I've ever been to. It was so loud. I'm still feeling smug about the earplugs.
Yeah, it was a wise decision. If you're unfamiliar with this band somehow, they are a post-rock instrumental band. Although, you know, over the years, and certainly with this new track that they've just put out called Your Last Breath, moving, I guess, into, you know, a not just exclusively instrumental space, there is spoken word element. There are other things that kind of crop up along the way. But mostly they've just been a band that I've followed kind of really, you know, kind of to the letter for quite some time. And if you get the chance to go see them live, definitely, definitely take it. By the time this podcast comes out, they are playing a few select dates across Ireland over the weekend. So if you happen to be in those areas, go look them up online and go along if you can. Otherwise, I'm sure another opportunity will arise. But in honour of this new song, Your Last Breath, which we will be discussing with the lads momentarily, we are doing a top five spoken word kind of related.
Yeah, so it's top five songs with spoken word movie samples, I suppose. That's a bit of the title will be far more succinct in your feeds, everybody.
Spoken word samples.
Yeah. This one, I think we specifically honed in on songs that sampled movies and movie dialogue.
Yeah. It just happened that way. It worked out that way.
Yeah, like this
we definitely didn't have a lot of time this week, and we're not recording a couple of days earlier than usual, and we weren't really up against it.
Yeah, it's definitely
largely
not
because
Tuesday,
of me
everybody.
Shooting down a lot of Adam's ideas, which I do apologize for.
It's okay, they're all gone in the bank. We can do them all another time. There are some good ones in there, I will say, but yeah, no, this one was fun. It's again, there's like, you're going to know of certain tropes where there's maybe certain genres that might crop up later in our list that, you know, have a reputation for sampling movies. You know, we'll discuss all of that. But yeah, there's a lot out there. It was nice to have, I think, the bumpers up in the bowling lane, so to speak, because there's so many ways we could have gone with this. Like my short list before we kind of whittled it down to movie samples was massive.
Yeah, it's much more broad.
We
focus in on kind of, we've laser focused in on a certain aspect, which we will get to later in the show. In the meantime, it is patreon.com/noencore if you want to help support the show. Throw us a fiver a month if you feel like it, and most importantly, I suppose, please tell your friends about the show in general, spread the word, and we will now crack on with our famous news section, which will be super brief this week, by the
way. Speed run, baby.
Speed run of the news section.
Start spreading the news.
Yeah, news in brief, because we have a big interview to get to and I don't want to, you know, spend too much time on the news section. Also, we're recording it earlier in the week. But real quick, an important listener update from last week, from our top five last week. You will recall, we talked about lots of different things last week, controversial things last week, bizarre music controversies, and one of them has prompted a listener to get in touch. So please take it away, Glenn. Thank you.
Going into the Brian McFadden stuff, I thought you, yourself and Adam would be pleased to know that I saw on socials last week that Keith Duffy and Brian McFadden are in the studio together recording new tunes together as Boys Life. So yes, they're very much still active and there's new tunes coming from those boys. Can't wait to see it. Can't wait to see it. Hope you're well, dude. Talk to you soon.
I'm very well now.
Yeah, that's made my week. I don't know about you.
Can't wait. Maybe we can get them on the show.
Oh.
Preferably just one of them.
Let's make sure they don't go through the back catalogue anyway. Yeah. Well, Keith Duffy can, because he's famously a honorary friend of the show and tire connoisseur.
That's true.
But Brian McFadden maybe will warn him off. Like, don't do research. It's okay.
Could be a fun interview, though.
I reckon that would be a huge get. What? And so much fun.
Watch this space.
Yeah.
In other news, similarly, I guess, controversial, the estate of the late Sinead O'Connor has basically issued a cease and desist to Donald Trump.
That's another one for his list.
Because he was using music at his rallies. The estate has said that she would have been disgusted, hurt, and insulted. Her version of Nothing Compares to You was used at one of his rallies. I mean, like, again, as you say, the list just goes on, which is ridiculous. I think this is a fair enough thing.
Who have we got now? We've got the Village People, we've got...
In terms of official legal writs, I'm not quite sure, but there's lots of instances. Like, we had the Smiths were used and Johnny Marr was like, I'm shutting that down.
Oh yeah, what is it? Shutting this shit down right now.
Yeah, pretty much. I just don't understand why they can't I've got more here. Rihanna, Neil Young, Linkin Park, the late Tom Petty, and Aerosmith frontman Steven Tyler.
He's running out.
But there are plenty of acts who are pro-Trump. I mean, yeah, just get
Kid Rock's entire discography.
Just get like Taproot or something, you know? Why not? With their one good song. And finally, in our ultra quick news section, speaking of Sinead O'Connor, Fight Like Apes have recorded the song Black Boys on Mopeds and we'll be releasing it. It's coming out on the 15th of March, this cover. All proceeds of the release will be donated to Leji Center, Ada refugee camp occupied West Bank in Palestine. So May Kay from Fight Like Apes has been, if you've been following her on Instagram, if you know her personally, she's extremely vocal in support of Palestine and has been for quite some time. She's a member of the collective Irish Artists for Palestine as well. Mm-hmm. And she said, with regards to this cover and the single, that she was in Ada refugee camp in the occupied West Bank of Palestine when she heard that Sinead O'Connor died. She says, there was no one there that didn't know who she was and why she was so important. We had a sing-song late into the night on the roof with Irish people singing Sinead songs, Palestinian people singing beautiful folk songs in Arabic. Back when she released the song in 1990, like most things she did, it was so brave to speak the way that she did. Truly brave, she was mocked, ostracized, and shamed. May Kay goes on to quote a lyric from the song, and she says, in the lyric, of course, "These are dangerous days, to say what you feel is to make your own grave." Moving on from that lyric, May Kay says, "Because of her and her relentless energy for speaking truth to power, it's not dangerous these days for people like us to speak out. She paved the way. We owe this to her." So Fight Like Apes, who are in the middle of kind of a mini comeback of sorts, this will be their final release as Fight Like Apes, this song, it says in the press release. And it will be performed live at their gig at the Olympia Theatre coming up on the 6th of April. A reminder that all proceeds go directly to Leji Center, Ada Refugee Camp in the West Bank, an organization that is working to help the people of Palestine. And if you want to make a donation beyond purchasing the song, you can go to leji.org/donate.
Yeah, and that link's going to be in the show notes if anybody wants to do that.
Indeed. And in the meantime, we're going to speed along right now and get to our interview. This is Overhead the Albatross. Actually, I think first we'll have a listen to the new track, will we?
Yeah.
So, sometime in the making. It's been a while since the band have released a song. They came back as a full-fledged band with a song called L'Appel du Vide in late 2022. They've been kind of gigging around sporadically here and there and working in the background on their forthcoming record, their second album. And this song is coming from it. It's called Your Last Breath. It's a song that I found deeply emotional. I should say just ahead of it as well that like there is, at the end of this track, and we will be talking about the interview, there is like a spoken word section and it's about life, it's about death, it's about grief, it's about love. It really, really spoke to me. I'm sure it's going to speak to so many other people, but we'll take a preview of it now and we'll come back and we'll chat to Luke and Dave from Overhead the Albatross. We'll be right back. All right, that is Your Last Breath. It is the brand new single by Overhead the Albatross, a band that go way back on this podcast, of course, appearing on the very, very first episode. But now I'm delighted to welcome back to the show Luke Daly of the band.
Yeah.
And I think making your very first appearance, David Prendergast of Overhead the Albatross.
That's correct.
It's a hallowed day to have you guys in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's really nice here.
Thank you for coming. And yeah, as noted, Your Last Breath. So it is the second single off the upcoming album. And yeah, like there's a lot to talk about with this one. And I kind of want to, I guess I'll start with you, Luke. I'll say, like, you know, it's not the very first time, but it's a rare foray into spoken word for Overhead the Albatross. We'll be playing a clip from it momentarily, which will reflect that. But given the live show since the band's comeback a little while ago, maybe it won't be so rare going forward. Before we get into the content of what is kind of being declared out loud on this song by you at the end of it, can I ask how you and the guys are finding this pivot, you know, to bringing in spoken word, bringing in other things, after having been, you know, kind of almost exclusively instrumental for so long up to this point?
Yeah, I guess there was never any sort of rules set in place and how we were going to write music or what instrumentation could be in the songs or whether we were going to have spoken word or singing on the songs. It was never like we were just an instrumental band and we had those set of parameters or rules for our music ever. It was always just if the song needed singing, the song needs spoken word, if it needs synths or sax or whatever, that's how we kind of approach each song with that kind of open mind. So it was never, when we started putting spoken word down, it wasn't like, oh God, we hate this because it's spoken word, or this is kind of unusual for us to do this, or we don't do this, this isn't us. It was just like, does it sound good? And I think, like, because there's, you know, four of us and we've all got different tastes of music and stuff like that, it's kind of nice when it resonates with every member of the band. Then you know that it works and that it's something that we should push forward with. But, you know, sometimes you think something's good and the rest of the band think it's shit. And, like, that's okay. But it's just, yeah, I guess. What do you think, Dave?
What do I think? You've never asked me that question before.
Will I regret it?
I think we should delay it. No, I think we've done stuff like this in the past, but we always bury it in the mix. So we have, like, we do have spoken word in some sections of the first album.
Yeah.
But it's, like, distorted or really fucking down in the mix amongst the loads of guitars.
Well, we had that one track as well, didn't we? Leave It to My Ghost as well.
But it's always buried down because we're always a little bit afraid of, like, giving the song a meaning or something like that. I think in the past, I'm not saying now, I feel like we wanted everything to be a little bit open to interpretation and we don't want to tell the listener what they should be feeling. So that was important to me, to always be a little bit vague. But then since, you know, the whole fucking world turned upside down and COVID and stuff, I don't know, we're hanging out together more and just, like, we have to do something that actually is meaningful. And just be a little bit more open and honest and just, this is what the fuck goes on in our heads now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, I mean, like, I find myself thinking about other tracks like, you know, Our Youth Are Younger and obviously the Time kind of cover and how that kind of interpolates, you know, a spoken word sample. But obviously with this one, you know, despite the, as you say, like, you know, the ambiguity and kind of not just, you know, and again, it is that tricky thing because, like, I think I found myself in situations over the years where I really don't want to just say to someone, tell me what it means and, like, you know, like give me everything behind it. I do love the mystery and the ambiguity. With this one though, Luke, I think it's fair to say that there's maybe not as much of that. I think it's pretty explicit what you're getting at.
And it is.
I'm curious if you wouldn't mind kind of, I guess, elaborating on what made you write the words that you're saying on this one and what they mean to you and where they come from.
Okay, so we went on a kind of hiatus for 5 years after the first album, around 2017. We were in the room, we were kind of writing this second album, which sounded a lot different back then. And we were together and we kind of were standing in the room and it just came to a point where we were looking at each other and we're like, look, this is not working. There's loads of stuff going on. People didn't really want to be here. People were distracted with other parts of their life. So we went on hiatus, unofficially, but it was a hiatus. And then after the pandemic, which I think a lot of bands seem to have done, is who were on hiatus or break, they seem to have gotten back together after the pandemic. Like, they kind of realised what they were missing. And there was an element of that where I think we realised, oh, do you know what, we should finish. We had always, me and myself and Dave and a couple of the lads, we'd spoken, we'd have to finish this album. We have to finish it. Like, we have to come back and finish it at some point, whether it's 10 years down the line or whenever. And so after the pandemic, we're like, right, fuck it, it's time, let's do it. So we got back together. And at that point, when we got back together, lots of things, kind of monumental life things happened. My dad died, and then our close friend, Dave's very close friend, Paul, he passed away. He was only 33. And then people started having kids around the same time. So Stevie had his son, Oisin, and Dave.
I got married.
Dave got married and kind of adopted three kids, and now has Sesafia with Raquel, his wife. And so there's a lot of these huge kind of life moments happening for us. I guess it comes with the age and that sort of territory, you know? So a lot of these things and feelings and emotions and, just started to feed into the music naturally. And so a lot of that energy and that kind of sadness and joy and everything mixed together kind of started to bleed into what we were making. So the words, there's a theory called Caesar's last breath. I don't know if you've ever...
No.
That the amount of molecules that you combust with every single breath, something like six... I don't know, some mad number, 6 zillion or some number, six. There's highly likely that you've actually inhaled the molecules that Caesar, when he died, when his last breath, when he was assassinated by the senators, his last breath, it's highly likely that we've all inhaled the molecules that he expelled with his last act. And I thought that was like a really kind of powerful image and idea. And so that influenced the idea for the words for the song. And it kind of seemed fitting because it sort of felt like the connection and the oneness that the cycle that was happening anyway in our real lives with death and birth kind of started to feed into the idea and the concept of the album. And I think the album has kind of become a concept album. Not that it ever started out like that. So that idea and those feelings kind of fed into the lyrics, and that's kind of the idea, is that, you know, your last breath with your last act, your billions of molecules combusted in your lungs and exploded into being and circle around the world and ended up on my lips. And so, like, the journey of the molecules and the fact that we're all inhaling each other all the time. I know that sounds absolutely disgusting.
I'm sure there's some people who, you know, actually find that really attractive and appealing, you know, pay money for such things, you know.
But yeah, so that idea, it kind of helped me deal with the idea of death a lot. And, you know, the fact that that those molecules still exist, like that he created that in his lungs and they still exist out there, and we'll come back around and I'll inhale them and we'll all inhale each other, which is still really weird and I'm extremely sorry. But yeah, so that was the idea for that song. In the video you'll see we see pictures of our family, and it starts off with pictures of us with as children and videos of us as children, and then it kind of goes to videos of
our parents and you know.
And then at the end, the next generation of kids who,
hopefully don't get into music.
No, I was going to say, they will take up the mantle within the band itself. It's like Overhead the Albatross becomes some kind of like, you know, handmade, like it's like, it'd be Overhead the Albatross 2,
just revenge. Need to figure out what instruments we need in the band and start, you know, but like by Kurt, trumpet.
But it's definitely like, it's, for me and Luke, we've been making tunes together since I can remember, and he was always writing rap verses and stuff like that back in the day when we were teenagers, you know, smoking weed and
spray painting, tagging your parents.
We had like a duo tag which was called Dip Lip. Was it Dip Lip?
Something
like that. And I thought his voice was amazing because it was British, and I was like, oh, it's so class.
So and, exotic.
But we never back then it was like, and he was always really fucking good at it, but he never put himself out there. And then during, in the last 2 years, I suppose, I'm not saying I forced him into it, but like I got him drunk and said, you need to write shit now. You need to shout into a microphone now. And it's like 2 a.m, we did that, you know what I mean? And he had stuff written. He's always writing stuff. He just never shows it to anyone. So, yeah, just, you need to get absolutely shit-faced drunk tonight. And this fucking song that needs something needs you shouting on it. And then 2 hours later, that's what it is.
So that's actually a question that I had, was what came first? Was it the piece itself, or was the music built around it? Because it fit, like... I know there's no like instruction manual when it comes to like the production and the songwriting, and it just kind of all happens in a world where everything just collides and kind of makes something magic, you know. But it feels like it fits so well that the song feels almost purpose built for the piece.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how it all.
I think. The song, the ending was written first. The music for the ending was written before anything else.
Yeah.
Or any other element of the song.
Musically, we thought the ending was... We had it. It was basically a different song.
Yeah.
It was 6 minutes of shite, and then there was the outro.
Yeah.
And...
in a different key.
And it was in a different key and stuff like that. But we always knew, it's missing something, but it's class. Like, it's very... Musically, it's powerful. Really powerful. And then we just... deleted the, you know, 6 minutes before it, and we were like, what does the album need? We have this type of song, we need that hypnotic kind of track again. Like on our first album we had HBG, and it has that kind of relentlessness, kind of
aggression,
like aggression, and aggression, kind of, and it's kind of sucking a bit of energy out of you or something, and it has that hypnotic fucking vibe where you're kind of getting in a trance. You're like, we need that again, so let's do something like that. So then that's how the start of the song kind of came about. And then, just the outro was done. We had some like random bits of Luke shouting, and we're like, we have to make more of that, and he wrote that piece. But it definitely was an easier track to, it just worked. I don't know. It's a bit strange.
One of those ones that just came together.
Some of them are an absolute trek. You know what I mean?
Jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, and it's like you could be waltzing around it for a year, 2 years, and it's just kind of collecting dust in the hard drive. But no, the reason I asked is, like I said, it just felt... It all feels like it's part of one continuous thought or one continuous like feeling, or like the crescendo feels too... It just feels so legitimate, and like, I don't think calculated is the right word, but like, it just, it all makes perfect sense together. Yeah.
I feel like as of now, it's like the proudest piece of music. I'm super proud of it, and I still like it now. And I feel like it's because it's really fucking simple. We always like sometimes try to hide behind things, and let's put this in 5 and let's have these spazzy hi-hats or something, and let's just fucking hide a load of shit. So, but this one is just starts off and it's fucking bare bones, and it just gradually goes. And we're old enough now to have a bit of patience to just let it keep going.
Yeah.
And you can, I think that's why we decided to do the video the way we did. It's like a performance kind of piece, because when you hear it then with with the visual, and you see all the elements slowly coming in, and it's just like, what the fuck is happening? We always wanted to do that, but we're always too excited to just, oh, the next thing. Oh, we have to go big. We have to do this. We have
to ADHD.
And like, oh, we have to be real mathy here and show off to our mates who come to our show. And it's just, this one's like, no, fucking chill the fuck out and let's, you know.
The corridor felt empty that day, like we were alone. As our eyes met while you were pushed, I knew that was it, our last look. I called out just as you were wheeled past, and the words "I love you" descended and echoed against the rubber floor. The last time our eyes locked was a fleeting glance of pain tinged with love. A sobering reality of our mortality. I want to be better. I want to succeed in your eyes and mine. I want to deliver and descend into an overwhelming feeling of accomplishment. I don't want that to be the last look. I don't want that to be the last look. Your heart, your eyes, your teeth, my soul is stretched. I'll never again be that person. I'll never again know that person. I hope one day I'm not playing pretend. I hope one day our eyes will meet in the sand, the clouds, or the stars. I hope one day I can look at death and understand there is nothing but a step. I hope one day I can inhale your last breath and feel it in my chest.
With regards to, I guess, all the emotions of the song, which I will now grill you on if you'll allow me, stop me at any time. I'm curious between that moment in the studio versus going on stage and doing this, because the first time I heard this would have been, I mean, it's got to be...
It was the Workman's Cellar, right?
No, it was the Workman's Main Room, which was in 2022?
Do you know what? I think that was a different song.
Okay.
And it was...
Because it was a very, like, Massive Attack-esque.
Yeah, that's a different
bit.
Song. That was the first time I did... I use my voice on stage.
Live, yeah.
But the first time we did this particular song in Dublin was The Cellar.
Okay, which, by the way...
And that was fucking tough.
Well, let me before we get to that, real quick, we were talking off mic, because I can go about venues and kind of sounds and stuff, and we were like, you know, smaller venues, et cetera. Like, Adam and I have said this a few times, but, like, the best decision, apart from going to see that gig, that Adam and I have ever made together is... thrown some earplugs in.
Yeah, before we got down there.
Because that was a loud game.
It sounded fantastic. Like, it was, to this day, and it this is not me placating you guys because you're sitting in front of me, but it's one of the best gigs I've ever been at. Like,
it was amazing. It was incredible.
Absolutely fantastic. And, like, again, the songs and the way that, like, they're performed, you do really, like, feel something from it. And then all of a sudden, like, this song breaks down and... you're quite exposed for a part, and then it just got, kind of all builds back up and around.
But this is the thing, because, I mean, you're talking about the math rock thing and maybe showing off to some people in the crowd, and I'm sure there are some people who go to your shows for that reason. But what has always struck me about going to an overhead gig, and I've been going to them for a long time now, and again, like I said to Vinny on the phone the other day, I was like, I find it really hard not to sound like a fanboy, but I do love the new song, so please believe me. I think the people who go to your shows go there for a catharsis, a genuine release. One of our friends who was with us that day was crying during one of the songs. And I say that with love, because I was like, I get it. I totally get it. And this song has made me cry. But I mean, I'm just curious for you, that first time you're stepping up to the microphone in front of people and getting this out.
I think we had a run of shows over the summer. It was we had a couple of festival slots, I think, and we performed it there, and it was messy and sloppy, and I was kind of going too quick or going too slow and missing certain beats where I had to hit. But you
still do, and like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no.
It, like, that's the good thing about him, and that is, like, it is a bit different every time.
Each time, and it always
will be. He'll never do the same thing twice.
It's a lot of words, even without the context.
And it's not hitting at the same point, bro. Like, it literally doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
He has the, whatever's going on, like, he fucking nails it in other ways.
I think the first few ones, remember we were up in...
I probably wasn't there.
You were there, anyway, it doesn't matter. We were at a few festivals, and... I didn't feel like I was delivering it very, very well, right? And then we did the Workman's Cellar, and that was the first time, obviously, everybody there. There was a lot of people there that we knew, and that was tough.
You also got, like, a lot of family go to these shows. Like, the band
none of them
way.
Had heard that, you know?
Okay.
And my mom still hasn't heard it. And yeah, that was really, 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 really tough because I was just like, oh, fucking hell, everybody's here. And I'm really exposed and basically bearing my soul on stage.
I put him on the spot as well because before we started the song, I was like, Luke, do you want to say anything about this song? And he was like, nope. And I was like, okay, let's go.
You just don't know what kind of mood you're going to be in at that point as well after the halfway through the set. And like I was going to say something, we played a show before Christmas and I was going to say something before it. And then when it came to the song, I was just like, nah, do you know what? Fuck it. Let's just play the fucking song. But it was a difficult thing to play in front of people. When it's been in front of people you don't know, I mean, like, I've said the words a lot now, so, like, that emotion has... it's still emotional, and it's still, like, there's a lot of emotion course and adrenaline coursing through you when you're on stage, but the most emotional time I think I'll ever have said it and will ever say it, unless my mom is in the room, is that gig in the Cellar when everybody, there was a room full of people I knew, you know, because you're bearing yourself.
Well, I don't want to overstep here because obviously we're talking about a very similar subject. You know, I've talked in this podcast a lot since my father died.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I did an episode shortly after he passed away and I was like crying during it. And I'm glad I did it because I felt like I needed to do it.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about him, you know, like on the show, and it's a great space to do that.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, we also don't want to do it too much because you don't want to blah, 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 exploit it. Who cares? But I mean, like, I got a lot from this track as I was always going to. But actually, weirdly, it took me a few listens, even though it's quite explicit in the lyrics. Yeah. I mean, like, it's somehow it was like listen 3 or 4, and I was like, oh God, of course, that's what this is about. Yeah. I think I was just overwhelmed by like, it's a new Overhead song, and like, Vinny sent it to me after midnight, and I threw it on before I went to bed, and I wasn't really fully taking all of it in. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, there's lines in this I find incredible. You know, like, there's a part where you kind of reference, you know, basically like effectively not being the same person before and after the event, which is something that everyone tells you. And I was told it a bunch. You know, people were like full on being like, you know, listen, you're a different person now.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And it turns out, of course, yes, like all the great cliches, that is in fact true. But I was just brought back. I mean, there's lines here about, you know, being in a hospital. And, you know, so naturally I'm back in the hospital when I hear that. And the one that really kind of made me just kind of lose it was, you know, just at the end, which is a real refrain when you're kind of like, to have shared in that, I feel incredibly lucky, which I guess is, you know, I took it as, you know, to have been a part of someone else's life, even if you're, you know, and listen, I don't want to ask about your relationship with your dad, but, you know, my own one with my own father was not perfect by any means. And now you're in that kind of weird process of like, I was having this conversation with somebody recently and I was like, you know, I don't want to just lionize him. There was bad stuff, but obviously you're carrying around this kind of heavy emotion. I was home at the weekend in the house. There was no one else there. And, you know, there's photos of him all over the gaff. And I kept looking for him, you know. I kept expecting to open up a door and he'd be there. Because you have that kind of thing in your brain of like, you know, well, you're just supposed to be there. Like, and this is the ultimate, I think, confrontation of like, well, I'm an adult now.
Yeah.
All of which is to say that I do really appreciate this song. And I guess for someone who's, it's an interesting contrast because like there'd be somebody in that crowd who won't have a clue what it's about. And there'll be someone who will know straight away what it's about.
Yeah.
And to that person, you know, like they could be hearing this for the very first time. But for you, obviously, it's as you say, like it becomes, it's an art. Like it's like a thing that you do as part of the show. And I just, I don't know, I find the whole process of the song really interesting. And like, and I do find it kind of mystifying that it took me a few listens to really kind of cop on to what was going on, even though it's right there. And yeah, look, I don't really have a question here. I just kind of was like, I think it's a deeply emotional track. And for a band that I've been following for so long, it's a strange thing to kind of have with me, you know, like, cause I consider myself a huge fan of this act. And I think at this moment in time, I don't know, it just felt like, I'm really glad that you did it, basically. And I thank you for putting it out.
I wonder if someone was telling me about 10,000 Days by Tool. And they were saying 10,000 Days is, I think, how many days Maynard's mum was going through chemotherapy or something like that before she died. And they were saying, someone was telling me the other day that in his later life, he said, not that we're ever going to be like as big as Tool, so it doesn't matter. But he was saying that he regrets that massively. And so, like, you know, not, like I said, not, like, we're never going to have to worry about it being, but even for the people I know, more than for the people I don't know, I was like, fuck, is it kind of weird that I'm exposing myself this much or being this kind of like vulnerable publicly in a song? And like, when you get it, you're saying you took you a couple of listens to hear it, like, it is, it's super honest, you know? So, yeah, that did cross my mind. I was like, fuck, maybe I haven't been too honest there.
Yeah, and we were editing the video together over the last 2 weeks. And I'm just home from, I live in the Philippines now, so, and I had a baby, Sophia, she's 5 months old, and I had to come back here then, and I'm going to be here, and I'm not going to see her until maybe she's 1 year old, maybe. And I'm dealing with that, and I'm also, you know, finishing the album with Luke and the boys, and we're editing this video for Your Last Breath. And that whole section, and we're putting in clips of his dad, and it's 2 a.m, we're putting in clips of Sophia and Kurt, Angel and Chloe, my other kids. And, you know, Oisin is in there, Stevie's kid, and all of us as children, and I'm just like, fucking hell, what are we doing to ourselves? Like, it's 2 a.m. and we're here for a week every evening because we're working, doing other shit during the day, and then the two of us get together and we're like back in the room and we're just like, sometimes it's too much. Like, I just can't deal with it. I just have to leave the room.
It was quite emotionally intense.
And I've never been like that with
any of the other
tunes with Overhead or in fact with anyone. So yeah, I don't know.
I think there's always been like again, and I say this as someone who's been following the band for as long as I have, and like it goes back to when I was in Hot Press and Craig introduced me to this band. And like, look, whether you're a post-rock band, instrumental band, whatever you want to call yourselves, I mean, like, some bands in that vein are just like, it's just the music, you know, it's just like incredibly intricate music and a cool looking band and boom, 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 boom. Not to say that you guys aren't a cool looking band.
Yeah, I hear now, but, calm down there, yeah.
But like with this, it's like, I've always felt that there was an accessibility, there was a vulnerability, there was like, it was penetrable in an interesting kind of way where like, whether it was being at a live show and maybe something goes wrong, you know, and like the crowd kind of rally around you. Like, I've always found that like there's a heart in the sleeve element to what you guys have done for all these years, you've meant it or not.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting, Dave, when you were saying earlier on about, you know, getting older and having more patience with each other and the music itself now. But I've gone to those shows and I've gotten more than just like, listen, it's fucking class and you're going to have a great epic time. I've come away like feeling like, you know, it's life affirming to me.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, from a fan's perspective, I think I said to you, Luke, I was like, I think people will get a lot from this track. And you may well have a day, and like, you're an artist, I'm not going to tell you, like, don't feel this way, but like, you may well have a day, because I have those days when it comes to whether it's something on the podcast, whether it's something I've written, a piece I wrote for my father when he died. Sometimes I look at that piece and I'm like, delete this.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, get that off the internet now, no one cares, and also, you really made yourself look like an idiot here.
Yeah.
Then other days, I'm like, no, it's important that I wrote that, and the mood I was in, and also, by the way, to go back to what you were saying about being drunk when you record those vocals, I was fucking drunk when I wrote that piece.
Yeah.
And it's the right drunk, edit sober thing, maybe. But, like, I guess that's just the contradiction of being a person. And, like, I do have those days. And I even said to you off mic, you were like, how are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm a bit down at the moment, whatever. But, like, and even now saying that, I'm like, oh, is that too much to say? But it's like, well, like, at this point...
Is this too much to say?
Probably.
Am I saying too much now?
But, it's literally in my head as we talk. But, like, at this point, like, sorry, 401 episodes into this fucking podcast. Like, what am I going to do? Like, delete the entire archive? Maybe. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking. Adam, over to you.
Yeah, like, I guess, like, on the back of all of that,
sorry for laughing.
No, please do. I encourage you, man. I own it.
On the back of all of that, like, I've got a lot of questions about like the kind of studio stuff and the production stuff, which we'll get to. But I just want to ask, has it helped you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely was very cathartic in the moment. Yeah, God, yeah. It was felt good to scream it, you know?
You definitely needed to do that.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah, no, fuck. It got a lot of like, there was an explosion of emotion that the night we did it, and when I was showing Dave it, and the two of us are sitting there, and like, I was like, here, I think I have it, kind of hammered drunk, you know, I'm stumbling in the room holding a bottle of vodka and laptop in one hand. I was like, I think I have it. And he's like, put the laptop on the ground. Maybe just put the vodka away from
it. Get that away from the electronics.
It's the rock star thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. There was a lot of vodka consumed in the making of this album. Mm-hmm. And vodka and sparkling water, which
it's
people...
It's a healthy choice. We decided it was a good idea.
People will think it's absolutely disgusting without anything else, but it is. It's rotten. It's better than drinking loads of fizzy drinks. Well, I suppose we could just not drink the vodka as well. But, yeah. What was the question again? it was cathartic. Yeah, it was. It was, it was literally getting something off your chest, I guess. That's all I can say.
It's still good to be working on it now, and we're doing the final tweaks. And some days I'm like, I'm fucking stuck.
It's out, Dave. Remember, it's out.
Oh yeah, I'm back here.
It's out now.
I'm back here in Dublin. I'm missing my family. Like, what the fuck am I doing in my life? And then you're looking at the video, and it's like,
And you listen to the song, and you're not sick of the song, and. Yeah, I think it's like, fuck it, what else are we going to do? Listen, I mean, you could go and look after your family, I suppose that's probably an important thing.
And at least the song, it's only 9 minutes long, guys. Like the song's only 9 minutes long, so there's not a lot of work there.
That's another thing, it's like, oh, I love this section so much, we should probably put it at the start, because no one's ever going to fucking hear it.
Are you worried about consumption rate, right? It's a very modern podcast problem. What about the consumption rate?
Well, I've only started learning about interactions, and I get sick in my mouth every time we have to talk about that.
Yeah, we all wish we were from the 70s when none of these analytics existed, but in terms of modern day production, I have to allow my sonic architect Adam to take the mic and grill you.
Yeah, I'm going to go bigger picture here, I think, for a couple of minutes, because like, given that, you know, the creation of the Overhead Records, like, is what I kind of want to get into, and particularly with like this record you're working on now at the moment, including this song, like, you look in the video, you see all these different elements being added, taken away, building, dropping. Like, I can imagine it, like, from my perspective as a producer and as someone who, like, is a recording engineer as well, it looks like a bit of a monumental task at times. I just want to know how you all navigate that, and like, what's the writing process like? What's the recording process like? How does it all come together through, you know, you've kind of answered it in a way, saying that like, there was this idea that we had and then we kind of built on that and then stitched it and, you know, added the spoken piece and took away the first half and then, you know, completely shelved that and wrote something anew. So is that the case with everything? Does sometimes it all happen in one go? How do you pick which instruments to add and take away? There's a baritone sax on this record, as well.
I didn't know it was called a baritone sax. I just thought it was a big fat sax.
Gigantic,
I've seen it in the video. It's a baritone sax. I forgot about that. I feel like most of the songs they're all done the same way, and the album is co-produced by the two of us, and we just take it in turns to fucking rip it apart. There's like a million tracks. There's a million little tiny elements. There's half of them you forget are even there. And you're constantly soloing and deleting things and matching different elements with different things. And like, what is good anymore? Like, there's so many ways you can go about it. And it gets really confusing and really... I really love it. Like, I love doing it. It's probably my favorite thing to do in music, is exactly what the two of us have been doing for the last 2 years. Everything else I hate. Like, I hate going out and performing it live. I hate everything about it. I hate, you know, talking about it, and I hate having to do photo shoots and all that. But that, the 2 years of us, it sounds awful. It was awful, in fact. Mm-hmm. But I loved it.
It's not over yet.
And it's still not over. But it's basically, we throw a million things at it, and then we rip it apart and start again and build it up and then rip that apart again and go again. And I think it's really fucking hard to do and hard to stay motivated. That's why it takes so long. That's why we went on hiatus so many times. But for this one, just myself and Luke got in like this weird kind of trance for a couple of months where we just took it in turns, and I never got too into it. And when he would know when I was like fucking stressed to bits trying to make a section work, and he'd be like, "Oh, you go fuck off for a few hours," and he'll hop in, and then he'll go down the exact same rabbit hole as me, but he'll always find something cool that I've never heard of before. Even though I may have played it in, I'm like, I did that like 3 months ago, and he's after finding it in a fucking, you know, the playlist
disabled somewhere underneath.
And I'm
something.
Like, where was that? And he's like, oh, you did that like a couple of weeks ago. I was like, oh, fuck me, right? Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So then we just kept each other kind of sane, but also we were a little bit insane for a while. And then the guys would come in, Stevie and Vinny, and they, you know, tell us what they thought, and that was really helpful. Like, yeah. when they come in and just be like,
Stevie actually came up with the idea for the sax. He came in and he was just like, oh, you know that Radiohead song, the National Anthem? And we were like, yeah. He's like, we should do that there. Fuck it, yeah, let's do it.
So then we got Richard in and he fucking soloed for like, I think, 4 hours. Me and Luke were editing a different song in another room. Like, we were like multitasking. Me and Luke are going to be doing this song. I think we're doing strings with someone.
Yeah.
And Stevie was in the other room and all I heard was this soloing going on. I'm like, fuck me, there's going to be a lot of editing.
Yeah.
And sure
Richard's
enough,
a legend. He's an absolute legend. He's in the video as well.
Yeah, not editing as in like trying to fix it, and just like there's so much fucking takes. Like, they just went hell for leather. And then I had to sieve through it. And sometimes, man, I got so angry, and like, I always try to keep it in. I'm pretty good at like just, you know, even if something's stressing
suppressing
me out, suppressing the rage. But like,
that's the album title right there.
When you're 2 years in and then one of your best mates gives you like 62 tracks of sax and it's all good, but I have to go through it all, and I've gone through a million other things already. Like, I want to quit.
You did say earlier that this was a more simple song by comparison. It doesn't sound like it. When you strip all the layers back and all the tracks on the thing in front of you.
Yeah, but
simple in the sense that it's not. It's got a simple structure.
Narratively simple, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
But even still, like, it does. It feels really dense, and not in a negative way. Like, it feels like there's a lot that happens throughout the song, and you know, I'm like, again, with the producer here, I think I'm probably more in tune and looking out for stuff and looking out for things and trying to identify a lot, which is like great, and also it ruins everything, you know, at the same time. But like, I constantly found myself, oh, there's a new thing. There's a new thing. This has changed, and the synth arpeggio is coming in, the drops to the piano. Yeah. Then the time signature changes into 3/4. Then like in the back half of the song, and it's just like, I'm finding lots of like density there in that sense. But so to hear that it is like different to the rest, a lot more sparse, almost in comparison.
I think this, if you were to break, this is really boring, but if you were to break it into both structures, into a, like a blueprint of the song, there's probably only four parts, like four sections. Whereas if you go back to some of our earlier stuff, like Think Tank Thunk or something, there must be about 20 different songs just smashed together. I think that's what we mean when we mean it's like the most simple, as in there's like some
it's
sort
It's a
of,
slow burner.
Yeah.
It is a slow burner. Massive.
And,
so,
and a lot of, I think a lot of our new songs are quite similar in that way. Like, it's, there's an idea. And we're like,
hold on,
it's a good one.
Yeah. Let me ask you a final question, and let me ask you about the video. It looks fucking stunning.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It is genuinely fantastic.
It's Jay Boland, right? Isn't
Jay
it?
Jay Boland. Myself and Jay directed it together, and he DOP'd it. And it was a shoestring budget. Like, it was just me, him, Dave. And that was basically it in terms of crew. We did the lighting, we did everything. And then it was a long process, because the edit was a fucking nightmare.
As people will see, of course, by the time they're listening to this, you know, it's individual members in different places.
Yeah.
And obviously, as you say, well, all the interspersing of, you know, home video and photographs and so on and so forth. And it might sound easy, but I'm guessing it absolutely was not.
Oh, it was, fuck, each Well, apart from the day where we shot a couple of us in the same space, but then shooting everybody in different spaces. It's a 9-minute long song. Jay Boland decided to shoot it in 8K.
It looks incredible. It's so short.
Like, how many fucking terabytes is it?
I have no idea. Six hard drives, barely fits on a 4 terabyte drive. Like.
We got the two big RAID drives in the studio and they're about full up. Like, it's
fucking huge.
Sorry, can I ask as well, where in the video are you, Dave? Because like you're in this ridiculous, gorgeous, opulent piano house, but looks of things.
Yeah, so I'm from Strathen, and there's a place 2 minutes up the road from me called Mary's Pianos, and it's in Strathen Antiques, and they have this amazing antique shop, and then she also sells pianos, and she has loads of awesome pianos, and I've always bought my pianos there. Sorry, that sounds really... I bought 2 pianos there.
5,000
I don't buy, like, oh, I need a new piano
Pink
for this record.
But
I've also, you know, I've always telling my mates when they need to buy a piano, I'm like, you have to go to Mary. She's fucking awesome. She has amazing pianos. She gets really old ones. She, like, refurbishes them. They're class. Anyway, so she let us use the space, and which was amazing. And it's just, yeah, there was, like... 30 pianos and we just lit them all up with strobes and stuff. She was kind of like, what's going on?
Because so much haze in the place as well. And like,
Jay was just like, more haze.
I was just like, I went out, I asked him, I was like, hey, is it all right if we use the hazer? And it's a water-based hazer. It's not going to affect any, it doesn't do damage anything. And the owner is like, yeah, but just don't let the haze near the pianos. And I'm like, that's not how a haze works. I can't control the haze.
And you can't control Jay because he has a remote control for his haze, and he's like, more haze.
Yeah. So the whole place is billowing, right? And then like we were like, well, this place really holds the haze. It's no, like, usually when you're hazing a space, when you're filming, there's some sort of air gap where it's escaping from. And this place is really well sealed. So it's all just sitting in there and it was fucking dense, you know. It looked literally walking through fog. And we finished up and we just opened the door. And I swear to God, there was just
Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg getting out of
Mary's Antiques.
Coming out. The guy walks up and he's just looking at the haze. And I was like, yeah, thanks very much. We didn't get near any of the
pianos. Gotta get me one of those pianos immediately.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space.
By the sounds of things, through everything you've told us, through what the video shows us and what the song tells us, you've both and the rest of the guys, you've poured a lot of yourselves into this emotionally, physically, technically, in every sense. And I know that myself and Adam are super grateful for that. I know a lot of other people will be when they hear it and when they see the video as well. And we're grateful for you coming in today as well. So thanks, guys.
Thanks very much.
Thank you
a lot
so
fun.
Much.
Cheers.
Really appreciate it.
We'll definitely have you back on when the album comes, whenever that may be.
It's
in May.
It's definitely going to be May.
All right, good stuff.
100%.
Yeah. Middle of May.
Well, we'll see you then.
It's definitely on a Friday, right? Because that's the only day you can release.
They have Fridays in May, yeah. I believe so.
Famously, so. Yeah.
They still have those. They haven't got rid of those, you know, because of woke or whatever people say.
Right. Cancelled Friday.
that's over here at the off track, everybody. Your last Friday is in May. And thanks once again to Luke and Dave from Overhead the Albatross. The track is called Your Last Breath. It's out right now, so go listen to it.
Fantastic song. Really, really fantastic song. Like, so much to take from it. So much in it. Like, if you're a fan of post-rock, you're going to love it. If you're a fan of, like, you know, soundtracks, like, it kind of brings to mind the Oppenheimer soundtrack a little bit in parts.
Sure, yeah.
Like, it's very, very cinematic. It's beautiful, great songwriting. A fantastic performance by Luke. Like, just really, really great. Really loved it. And check it out.
Yeah, no, I've been walking around with it for a while now, and I definitely got a lot from it, as you might expect, I'm sure, as I said in the interview, many others will too. And very much looking forward to the record. I suspect we will have the band back on around that time and have a wider chat with them, if it all allows for that. But in the meantime, we move to our top five this week. So it is top five spoken word samples. And as Adam noted at the top of the hour, it's pretty much everything here features from a film. So it's like basically like as it sounds, it's like someone taking dialogue from a movie, putting it into a track, whether it's at the beginning, middle, or the end, and using it to kind of bolster the track around it. So
sure.
It's really that simple. Yeah. It's really that straightforward. There's not a lot more to it. But we've picked out some standout ones that have kind of stopped us in our tracks. And number five, appropriately enough, and I'm happy to spoil it up top, given the band that we've just had in the studio, it is, in fact, Overhead the Albatross at number five for us this week. Let's take a listen.
Brutes have risen to power, but they lie. They do not fulfill their promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves. Enslave the people! Now let us fight to fulfill that promise! Let us fight to free the world! To do away with national barriers! To do away with greed, with hate and intolerance! Let us fight for a world of reason! A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness! Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
I genuinely get goosebumps every single time. I really do.
It's phenomenal, yeah, isn't it?
This is Overhead the Albatross doing a cover of Time, the Hans Zimmer track from the film Inception that came out in 2010 that I'm sure we've all seen a million times, the Christopher Nolan movie, which I've got issues with, as you might imagine, if being a Christopher Nolan movie.
2.5 out of 5?
No, it's 3, I think.
Last
time I watched it, it was a 3. I just think it's crazy overrated, but it's very he makes very rewatchable films, some of which I like, some of which I don't. Anyway, look, listen, we'll get into that, but I do think the track Time by Hans Zimmer is amazing. I think it's an incredible piece of music. I like the score for that film overall. I also like that the score did not win the Oscar. Who did? Who beat
in that year?
Yeah, so in the 2011 Oscars for 2010 films, it was quite significant for me. You know?
Oh, it was definitely Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Was it for Gone Girl?
For The Social Network.
Okay.
It was their first time of asking. And if you ask me...
That's fine. Deserved, in fairness.
It's an incredible score.
It's very good.
I'm still surprised that it beat this, though. Anyway, Overhead the Albatross recorded a cover of Time in, I think it was 2016, and it came out. And as you heard in that clip there, the song builds to... an excerpt of the, well, pretty much almost, I think it is the full closing speech from the film The Great Dictator, as spoken by Charlie Chaplin, legendary silent movie star. 1940 American anti-war political satire black comedy, written, directed, produced, scored by, and starring Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, who'd have thought? Christopher Nolan, pull your socks up, mate.
Oppenheimer's great, in fairness. I do hope he sweeps the Oscars, which are upcoming, I think. It's this weekend.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
okay.
Saturday?
Sunday. Sunday. So, best of luck to Cillian Murphy, of course, and others. But here's the thing, right? The Great Dictator, have you seen it?
I haven't. No, I haven't.
It's one of those ones I saw when I was very young and need to actually keep going. I need to go back to it. I keep meaning to go back to it, but I never actually bothered doing so. Yeah. Usually I'll just fire up this song instead. But like that speech is the culmination of this film. Effectively, he's playing a dual role. He plays a ruthless fascist dictator who's modeled on Adolf Hitler and, you know, Mussolini and lots of others, but primarily Hitler in terms of the iconography and the look. Yeah. He also plays a persecuted Jewish barber, and it ends, the film ends with like a switcheroo in which this character finds himself, you know, in the role of the evil fascist leader and, you know, uses the opportunity to speak this incredible speech, this amazing, amazing speech, which many have, you know, like if you go on to, there's a hilarious moment on Wikipedia here where it says, like, you know, the climactic monologue has frequently been listed by critics, historians, and film buffs as perhaps the greatest monologue in film history, and possibly the most poignant recorded speech of the 20th century. And then in brackets next to it, it says, citation needed.
Yeah, absolutely, citation
like,
needed.
How do you clarify, like how do you identify that? But it is an amazing speech. It's about love, it's about overcoming overcoming hate, and it's about, you know, becoming united together. And it's tough because, like, you know, I, whenever they play this song live, when Overhead do it, I always, I tend to kind of tear up. I do find it quite beautiful. I am someone who struggles with life and struggles with positivity, you know, in truth, you know, I've fucking suffered from depression my whole life, all that kind of stuff, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, for this to kind of win me over, I think it means a lot to me. But at the same time, you know, I can't help but come away from it being like, you know, listen, I know this film is from 1940, but I'm just like, look at the world today. And even without what's currently going on, you're just like, I just think people are their own worst enemies, unfortunately. And I guess maybe I'm a fatalistic person, but this song makes me feel less that. And I do think it's gorgeous. I think it's an incredibly cathartic thing that they do with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're also using, as I say, you know, the cover of Time Alone is really impressive. Like, it's a great song and they do it really well. But the mashup of this, I think, is quite inspired. Even though, of course, you know, this speech has featured in other songs. Like, there's a Pelinutini song that uses it. There's U2 used it as part of their introduction sequence for their Experience and Innocence tour when they played in Europe in 2018.
I don't remember it. I was at the Three Arena show.
I don't remember it either.
I don't remember it. Yeah.
And maybe they didn't do it there. Coldplay, on their Head Full of Dreams tour, used the final speech as the opening to their shows, blended with electronic sounds played behind the speech. Coldplay made use of the speech to echo their own message of the tour, which included spreading hope and love throughout the world. Mos Def, or Yasin Bey, as he's known these days, sampled it in the song War. You know, it's not like a revolutionary thing to put this in a track. But I think Overhead did a really incredible thing with it.
My takeaway from it is, like, there's certain, if you listen to the whole thing, it's like there's certain elements, and this is like just a total like happy accident, or maybe it was like structured that way, but it certainly doesn't feel like it, particularly after seeing it live when the visuals are with it. It in step is just fantastic. But there's parts of the speech that hit the certain rhythms that the song is also hitting, if that makes sense. It's in time, like it does feel like it like happens in time in parts, or like just out of time enough for it to feel musical. And that's like super, super special. And that's kind of where I went in terms of my other picks for this top five. It were bits that like kind of caught me instinctually as like, you know, that bits that would stop you in your tracks. And it's like the song is better for having these pieces, and the song is better for these small moments in, you know, in the song, and for it to just like have that power in itself is phenomenal. And I don't know if, you know, it's a case of selection. It's a case of positioning on behalf of, like, you know, the production side, but, you know, the choice is everything, and the fact that it is relevant to, you know, the song title even in itself is just fantastic. I think it's a prime example. It's a prime example of how you should sample, and what, you know, good placement of a sample in a song.
Yeah, and this episode is better for me dropping my phone on the ground there and smashing into the microphone as I was trying to pick it up.
Well, that's going to be edited out.
And then gurgling into the microphone as well. No, I don't think you can.
I can.
Don't think you can.
I can. Listener won't have a clue what you're talking about.
Lastly, on this, there's a really good live performance of the song Time, which sadly Overhead the Albatross are not part of. It's Hans Zimmer and his crew of people, which includes Johnny Marr. And it's you look it up on YouTube and it says, you know, Hans Zimmer Time, Inception, whatever, like live in Prague. And it has 51 million views on YouTube, right?
That's a lot. Oh, tell me we're going where I think
No,
crap.
we're not going to the comments. the comment comes from me. Because, like, it's a great song. People do love it. I'm sure it would climb those numbers, pretty strong numbers, regardless. But I must say, the cynic in me, I have to say, Adam, is the thumbnail is of a very beautiful woman playing the cello. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, that's what you chose for Hans Zimmer. Like, I'm like, okay.
It's all about clicks, Dave.
It really is. Yeah. And it's sad to see
Hans Zimmer stoop to those lows.
Well, it's uploaded by some person.
Okay, right. By Hans Zimmer.
But it just always struck me that I was like, yeah, I'm not surprised that's always doing the rounds. But,
I'm gonna check the comments out on that video. I can't wait.
I'm sure they're great. Yeah. I'm sure there's lots of, you know, like, you know, I tried to, you know, go into my dreaming space to retrieve the ones I loved, but unfortunately it just didn't happen.
Yeah, well, like, wasn't there one we talked about like a while back where like someone was like they were shot dead in the street? Yeah, like something like that. I just like absolutely bizarre. Anyway,
that's the YouTube comments for another day.
Yeah, 100%.
That's our number five in the spoken word samples in songs. Adam, I believe you have picked number four.
I have picked number four, and I will say full disclosure, I didn't know about this song until my research for this podcast. But like I mentioned about the Overhead the Albatross thing, this was a sample that just grabbed me immediately. And it's, again, I think a great example of placement, and is a real testament to the skills of one of the producers involved.
If you're frightened of dying and you're holding on, you'll see devils tearing your life away. But if you've made your peace, then the devils are really angels, freeing you from the earth.
That was a song called Rabbit in Your Headlights. The vocal you heard there was Tom York at the end, and it's from an act called Uncle, UNKLE, founded in 1992 by British producer James Lavelle. Again, I had no idea about this group. I didn't know they existed. Did you know anything about these guys?
Yeah, I heard of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a slight blind spot, but definitely in that kind of 90s realm for me of like acts I'll check out one day and then never do.
This is like kind of given me a real drive to listen to this particular record. This is the second album, Science, PSYENCE Fiction, released in 1998, which drafted in an all-star lineup including the addition of DJ Shadow to the group. And I think that it's pretty safe to say that I would imagine DJ Shadow's responsible for that sample placement and that sample chopping, just given his prowess and knowing kind of his tastes over the course of his discography. I just feel like this has DJ Shadow written all over it.
I think Tim Goldsworthy was in them as well.
Tim Goldsworthy was in the band,
who of course went on to become friends and then not friends with James Murphy of LCD Sound System.
I don't know the story at all.
If you read Meet Me in the Bathroom, it's all about the DFA thing and their big fallout. And,
okay.
You know, there's lots of, you know, no, it's fine, but it's like, it's clear that they fell out. Big style.
Well, this album in particular, it didn't feature him, but it did include Tom York, who you just heard, Mark Hollis from Talk Talk, Mike D from the Beastie Boys, Kool G Rap, Jason Newsted from Metallica, Badly Drawn Boy, and Richard Ashcroft from The Verve. Excuse me. This song, so the sample you heard was Danny Aiello's dialogue from the 1990s movie Jacob's Ladder,
which I've actually never seen. I remember my brother or someone had it on the house when I was younger, and I was really freaked out by it. So I believe it's about a Vietnam veteran who's going through some kind of death dream or something. But when you did tell me that you picked a track with a Danny Aiello vocal sample, I was really hoping it would be from either Do the Right Thing or Leon.
I'm very sorry to disappoint.
It's fine. No, you didn't disappoint.
I will say that, like, this, I don't know what, it's the line for me that really stood out was, but it was like, but if you made your peace, because it feels like it's actually someone singing in the song, and it's just so magical. Like, just that one moment to me was just like, oh, wow, I'm really taken by this. And that's the kind of reaction that you can get with a well-placed sample, and a sample that, you know, does feel a little bit relevant. If you go on to listen to the rest of the song, it's like, it's Tom York. It's quite existential. And it's fantastic. Like, the vocal performance towards the end is just absolutely amazing. It kind of crescendos and builds like Tom York, you know, does. I feel like it's one of his really, 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 perfect vocal performances. It's fantastic. Would highly recommend checking it out. So it's Uncle, Rabbit in Your Headlights, featuring Tom York. And I think we can kind of credit the production prowess to DJ Shadow on that one.
Yeah, they seem to have a bit of a fixation with the film Jacob's Ladder, because they also sampled something from that in the song I Need Something Stronger. And
well, actually, that I didn't know.
And looking at their album Never Neverland from 2003, like there's a ton of film samples in there. There's like something from the film The Prophecy. There's one from the film Fallen, the Denzel Washington movie that isn't very good, but gave us a good meme. There's also a piece from The Thin Red Line, which is interesting.
Yeah, maybe it was James Lavelle then who was the mastermind behind it all, because DJ Shadow left the group after this album. He was only on board for one. But yeah, it's like, again, it's just more of a reason for me to check out the back catalog of Uncle, because I think they're like, from what I've heard just in my brief research, it is fantastic. It is magnetic. It's hypnotic. It's the kind of stuff I really like. So
yeah I mentioned there that there was a sample on that Uncle record from The Thin Red Line. I had considered picking a song for my next pick, which does sample the film The Thin Red Line. It's actually it's an Explosion in the Sky song called Have You Passed Through This Night, and it's a really, really great piece of music and an incredible way of using the sample. But the problem is, we picked Overhead the Albatross already, and my next pick is already a post-rock band. So I tried to not just weigh this down with obvious post-rock fans, because post-rock fans seem to love this.
Yeah,
shit,
no,
you
they
know?
Do. And it is like, I won't say it's a symptom of the genre. I'd say it's like definitely a recurring theme among post-rock bands.
I mean, Godspeed You Black Emperor. It's common and it's often very effective. So you could easily do a top five which just stays in that genre and stays in that world. But
100%.
We will stay in that genre and that world for my number three, because I've been listening to this one quite a lot lately and it's great. I love it. So let's hear it. There that I was definitely trying to ape back when I was playing drums. This is a band called Maybe She Will, and the song is called Not For Want Of Trying, which is the title track from their debut record from 2008. A post-rock band who I think are still around. They did break up, but they've had a comeback in recent years. They're a UK outfit, and they're really, really good. I reviewed one of their records for, I think it was called Fair Youth, which just turned 10. Reviewed that for Drowning Sound, and I believe that was their farewell album at the time. It's a really, really good record. I'd recommend checking it out. I've always loved their name. I think the name is as emo as it could possibly be.
It's very good.
It's all one word, and it's Maybe She Will. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I don't know, man, you know, I don't know. And then the friend is, you know, listen, man.
They are back since 2020.
Maybe She Will. Yeah, they came back a few years ago with a song called Refuturing, I think, and it was really, really good. So this track, Not For Want Of Trying, it samples Peter Finch's I'm Mad As Hell And I'm Not Going To Take It Anymore speech from the film Network. Peter Finch being the actor, Howard Beale being the character. Network is a hell of a film. It's from the 70s, very award-winning, black-coated, like acid-tinged satire about media, and I guess about human behavior as well, written by the legendary Paddy Chayefsky, directed by Sidney Lumet. So it's about a fictional TV network and, you know, kind of like the quest for ratings and how far people will go to get them.
Yeah.
Have you seen this film?
I have not, but like this is, again, giving me such a spark to go and watch it, because like what I love about that sample in particular is that like you don't get it anymore with like modern recording equipment, is when he gets to a certain level of volume his voice starts to brick wall. And it's that like particular, like it's the sound of an era for me. It's the sound of like those movies from the 50s, from the 60s that just have like, again, there's such limited equipment they're working with, so volume was very difficult to manage, particularly if, you know, an actor was projecting themselves and above a certain thing, it's starting to really clip and it compresses itself and distorts. And you can try and emulate that all you want, but you just don't, you can't really emulate that anymore. Like, you know, you don't really get it as on point as it was back then, unless you're using that equipment.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the film, so, like, you know, to spoil, I guess, most of the plot or some of the plot, I mean, if you haven't seen it, you know, it's been out since 1976, guys.
Spoilers for a film that's, what, 50 years old?
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, I only actually got around to it start to finish a few months ago, I think, maybe last year. I'd seen bits of it, and, like, the speech was kind of, you know, doing the rounds a long time. You've seen the image of it as well. So, basically, so like I say, the character of Howard Beale, he's, like, the long-time anchor for this fictional news division, and he's told by his friend and kind of boss, I guess, that, you know, he's going to be taken off the air. Because of declining ratings. And then, like, he goes on and does his broadcast, but he announces to his audience that he intends to kill himself on the following week's telecast. And, you know, some people aren't paying attention, some people are. They intervene and they're like, okay, we got to speed this up, we got to get rid of this guy and not have this happen, you know, on the TV network. And so, you know, let's give him a dignified farewell. So he says, okay, I'll go on and I'll apologize for what I said. But when he goes on the air, he launches into this huge rant that you heard some of there, about life being terrible, and, you know, he kind of goes off on one. But doing this causes ratings to spike, and they begin to exploit him. And along the way, he gets turned into this kind of televangelist, and you deal with the kind of people behind the scenes and the machinations thereof, and in the end, it kind of culminates with just a really, like, nasty ending, which is purposeful and just kind of, you know, it's like, you know, it feels like, you know, It feels very, like, both of its time, but also incredibly ahead of its time. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it's about a guy going viral, and, you know, it becomes like that becomes his catchphrase when he says, you know, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take this anymore. You know, everyone's kind of shedding it out their windows, like at the time, and it's about tapping into kind of public sentiment and just anger and fear and all this kind of stuff. It's a great fucking film. It's really, like, it's really funny. It's also really sad in its way, and just, it's so prescient and quite brilliant.
Yeah.
And sure enough, you know, Maybe She Will are not the only act to take this song and throw it in one of their tracks. But I do love this one, and I find myself kind of on a recent kick of listening to them. And this track, Not For Want Of Trying, is like a really, really strong barrage. Like, it opens up immediately with just like guitars crashing on top of you, and then like it has these kind of slow demos where they put some piano and a building beat over this, and they kind of go in line and in step with his vocal intonation and where the song goes. And yeah, I mean, like, part of me feels like you know, like it's an easy magic trick, but at the same time, I think it's highly effective and very, very enjoyable. And I do think that post-rock bands every now and then do need to step outside their, like, of just here is us playing instruments. They kind of need the supporting characters of other supporting characters from films and TV and so on and so forth. Yeah. Newscast. I mean, even if you look at that band, like Public Service Broadcasting, which I kind of liked for a while but then got bored of, their UK act that just, you know, they construct their entire, all their songs based off old newsreels and old kind of broadcasting things that were, like, you know, through Britain over the years. And, you know, I when it first arrived, it was like, this is incredible. And, you know, I think the novelty wears off at a certain point, but it's still pretty inventive and impressive and interesting. Although there are some people who think that it's lazy and stupid. I'm in the former camp, but, you know, in general, I do like this kind of stuff. And if you take something, you know, whether it's the Charlie Chaplin speech or this speech, you know, and put some incredible post-rock over it, it's probably going to work.
See, this is, I mean, like, is it, could it be perceived as cookie cutter?
It's a bit of a cheat code.
Could it be, you know, looked at like that? Yes, absolutely it could. But I think there's a lot to be said for, I'll keep going back to it, sample selection. I think, like, sometimes something that already exists says it way better than you ever could. And I think it takes a lot to be able to, like, it takes a lot of, I don't know what the word is, but, like, there's, you know, there's a certain element of something that is deployed in a situation like that to be able to just, you know, say, well, I'm not going to try and create something new when there's something that's already doing it here for me. And I'm absolutely fine with that. I think that, like, that's, you know, I think that's okay. And we've heard it in the overhead cover with Time. I think that's a perfect example. This is a really good example as well. It just works. And I know that there's, like, there's the thing that's been memed to death with the Midwest emo thing and, like, King of the Hill being thrown into it. We've played that on the show here
that's
before.
That's so good.
But, like, yeah, it works.
Sorry, for anyone who doesn't know.
It works.
It's
every,
like,
time.
A scene like Bobby from King of the Hill being emotional and then, like, just like, like coming in over the top of it.
Yeah,
like,
it's fantastic.
Like American football style.
There's also another one that was, like, doing the rounds on Instagram for a while where there's, like, a guy finds a scorpion in his bathroom and he's like, oh my God, and he's, like, roaring, and someone's just, like, making this amazing Midwest emo song over it. I will say, we haven't picked any of that for the top five because there's no kind of, you know, there's no, I couldn't find any movie examples. I'm sure there are many.
Sure.
But we didn't kind of go into meme culture territory.
No, yeah, you could have the Alex Jones stuff of like someone playing metal guitar over one of his annoying, ridiculous rants.
Again, absolutely, that's a great use of time.
It's a hell of a subgenre. That could be a top five at some point, but we shall see. In the meantime, how about you hit us with your silver medal this
yeah.
week?
Yeah. I think this is a really good example of, an early sample in hip hop and how that kind of, I think, started the freight train to gain a little bit of momentum.
Technique. Fuck that. Special technique of shadowboxing.
I break it down to the bone gristle. Ill speaking, Scud missile, heat seeking. Johnny Blaze. So that was GZA, Shadowboxing, featuring Method Man GZA, one of the 10 members of Wu-Tang Clan. This song was produced by the legendary RZA, who is no stranger to movie sampling across his discography and cites like kung fu movies in particular, kind of from the 80s backwards. As a massive influence in his music and his production stylings. You'll hear lots of different samples across his record, across his discography rather, including the lead and title single from GZA's fourth studio album, Liquid Swords, which is introduced with a sample from the movie Shogun Assassin. This song, however, contains a dialogue sample from the 1983 movie Shaolin vs. Lama, which you can hear is being scratched at the start of the song. And I think this is a really good example of, and a shining example in particular of how samples can be used really creatively, and particularly in the hip hop genre. The fact that like it's being scratched in the way it is, and it does feel like it's in time. It does feel like it's, you know, part of the DNA of the instrumental. I don't think the instrumental would be anything even close to how it is now without it. And that's just at the start, that clip that you just heard there. It's also been, it's used again at the very, very end, like panned left and right. It's such a good sample. Really, really like it. And like I said, I do think that this, you know, RZA sampling and the way he did it was a real beacon in hip hop at the time in the 1990s. And, you know, you can see a lot of people who have taken influence from him since then. But yeah, absolutely fantastic. So that's GZA, Shadowboxing, featuring Method Man.
Yeah, I threw a Liquid Swords on earlier on, and, you know, the track opens with dialogue from Shogun Assassin.
Yeah.
Which, it's the exact same section of dialogue that pops up in Kill Bill Volume 2.
That I didn't know.
You've seen both those movies, I trust.
I have, yeah. Now, a long time ago, admittedly, but
well,
I have.
Spoilers for Kill Bill Volume 2. When the bride is reunited with her daughter, she's enjoying some quality time with her long-lost daughter, and they're watching Shogun Assassin. And you can hear it playing on the TV. You can hear the exact same like section from that's in, or some of anyway, that's in Liquid Swords. And you know, I find myself wondering, because both the Kill Bill films, although many will tell you that it's all one movie, but both movies have got two soundtracks,
and they're both by RZA, right?
They're both produced by RZA.
Yeah.
So there you go.
100%. That's the influence. It's got to be.
Two like, amazing soundtracks, but the first one in particular is fucking incredible.
It's really, really good. Like, again, like it just goes to show that his influence is almost, it's transcending music. And the fact that, like, it's kind of like a weird relay almost, because it's like he's sampling film, and then film are seeing his sample work and then taking those samples and putting them back into film. It's like a weird kind of, like, rally over the net almost.
One informs the other.
Yeah, exactly. He was so ahead of his time. I think we have like him to thank for, I guess, Dilla to a degree, you know, as well. I know they were kind of peers that they were kind of coming up around the same time, but, you know, at the time hip hop was not a massive genre. It wasn't huge, so I imagine there was probably a little bit of crossover there, a little bit of cross influence. But yeah, again, one of the shining examples of sampling in modern hip hop. I absolutely love this.
It's weird because, I mean, I was going to say that, like, you know, post rock feels inherently cinematic, but hip hop feels extremely cinematic.
Massively,
like, I mean,
so.
Genres go, like, they're two of the more, you know, overtly cinematic genres.
I wonder, is that because of the fact that, like, hip hop by design is a storytelling genre?
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah, like
it's a fair argument, Adam.
Yeah,
I'm not going to shit you down on it.
No, because I was thinking about this because again, we were like, not. To, I kind of will spoil if we go at this again, and I have a horse in the race. But like one of the songs that I was looking at to include here that was outside of the realm of movies was "Mortal Man" by Kendrick Lamar, and that has like this. Like it's a 9 or 10 minute song. It's like it's ridiculously long, but the start of it is an actual rap song that fades out with Kendrick. Then like look, he's like reading the "I Remember You" was conflicted thing that was part of the To Pimp a Butterfly team. Kind of runs across the whole record, and he then stops and starts to have a conversation. It's as if he's reading to somebody, and that again feels like it almost feels like a scene from a movie. So I think what you're saying is completely 100% true. And I do think it could relate to the storytelling element, but also is this like a, you know, a comment on how good these particular artists are at world building as well? I don't know.
No, for sure. And in terms of world building, so our number one pick this week, this is a really interesting one because like it's a track that has existed for a long time.
I didn't know this, by the way.
I think a lot of people don't know this.
And this is going to be, this is going to wake up everybody.
Yeah. And I think, I can't remember when I discovered it because it's a film I didn't get to until recently as well. It was during the pandemic when I finally got around to this film. And I think it's fucking amazing. So I'm going to play you a clip from a film. And you'll know it when you hear it. And then we've, Adam, with his incredible skills, has managed to interpolate and add the track itself afterwards. But like I say, you will know it the second you hear it. Here we go.
You're gonna get yourself killed for this. Oh, for this toxic waste, bitch.
What the fuck are you doing?
Oh, this is your life. Right here, right now. It's real time. You hear me? Real time. Time to get real, not playback. You understand?
Yes, indeed. Shouted aloud by the incredible Angela Bassett in the 1995 science fiction dystopian noir film Strange Days, right here, right now.
Had no idea.
Fat Boy Slim.
Had no idea. Genuinely had no idea.
A lot of people didn't. And there definitely was a thing about a year or two ago where someone on Twitter put it up and that exploded. They were like, "What? Sorry, what the fuck is this?" I had no idea. So, yeah, it's I didn't know for years and years and years as well. I just assumed it was a vocalist in the studio. I mean, the song, it samples another track anyway, and like it's not like Fatboy Slim doesn't sample people, and that's what he does.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just before we move on, like I was cutting the clips for this, the particular section had like after this video played, it was like a thing that said Fatboy Slim the samples, and it was like an 18-minute movie, yeah. An 18-minute video, and yeah, so like it's kind of intrinsic to his design, but yeah, I just again, you just kind of like I only identify that vocal with that song. I don't know it from anywhere else, you know what I mean?
And therefore, that's why I think for a lot of people it's so jarring, because you've heard it so many times in that context and nowhere else. And then, like, I'd love to... I definitely knew of it before I sat down to watch the film, I think, because I didn't have that, like, what the fuck moment.
Okay.
And I'm sure people have, though. They're like, sorry, what did I just hear?
Yeah.
It's Angela Bassett, the amazing Angela Bassett. And she's shoving Ralph Fiennes against a wall.
Yeah.
And giving out to him.
One of my favourite actors of all time.
He looks amazing in this, by the way. He's got like long blonde
hair. Yeah.
It's a film directed by Catherine Bigelow. I think it's fucking great. It's set in the future. It's set in the last 2 days of 1999, which was the future at that point, of course. Exploring themes such as racism, abuse of power, rape, and voyeurism. I mean, it's not one for, you know, all the family. And like, I've seen people kind of give out about it. They think it's a bit exploitative and cheap and kind of, it definitely has an ending that is questionable, but I think it's pretty intoxicating. I do want to see it again. And I remember being rather transfixed by it, by its aesthetic, by its vibe. And yeah, I mean, like, this being born out of it is quite interesting. Because, like, I definitely went through a Fatboy Slim phase when that album came out, his second album.
Mm.
And, like, you know, the Rockefeller Skank was everywhere.
Yeah.
So I bought the album, as everyone did.
Praise You as well, of course.
The fucking, like, that was... that album was gigantic. You've Come a Long Way, Baby. It came out on 19th of October, 1998. It was absolutely huge. It was just like...
single after single after single after single, right?
Yeah, the Rockefeller's Gang, Gangsta Trip, and Praise You, and Right Here, Right Now, all of which peaked in the top 10 on the UK singles chart.
This feels like a soundtrack to my childhood, like in those songs alone.
Rockefeller's Gang was in the FIFA game, definitely. It was like the lead track on the menu of one of them.
Yeah, of course. It feels like it was the proto FIFA...
The Patient Zero.
Yeah,
And like, this song has been used in other forms of popular culture though as well. Like, you know, it's kind of like come back into the culture in that kind of way, you know, coming from a cinema thing and then becoming in that way. Because like, it's used in Any Given Sunday. It's one of the...
That's right. Oh my God, yeah.
One of the like 85 songs that are in that film.
The fucking... Imagine the budget.
I listened to some of the commentary on that film. If you've never seen Any Given Sunday, by the way, everybody, you should. It's absolutely insane.
Al Pacino, Cameron Diaz.
The cast is outrageous. Jamie Foxx is amazing.
Fox, yeah.
Dennis Quaid, James Woods, Matthew Modine, John C. McGinley, lots of others who I'm forgetting off the top of my head. LL Cool J is great in it.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a movie. It's about American football and it's wild. Like, everyone's talking now at the moment about, you know, the 1999 being one of the best years for film, and
Summertime
it definitely
for Humanity,
was.
Of course.
And Summertime for Humanity. It is, of course, the 25th anniversary of the year 1999, so people are talking about the movies again. And I'm not seeing enough people put Any Given Sunday down on this list.
It's fantastic.
It's amazing.
Absolutely fantastic. It moves at lightning speed.
Never stops. It's basically if cocaine became human and made a film.
Yeah.
That's what this film is.
I would liken it to Elvis by Baz Luhrmann.
There legitimately is a track every 30 seconds or less.
Yeah,
and I listened to the commentary and Oliver Stone was talking about, you know, the licensing for this film was quite tricky. I'm like, I'd say it was,
yeah.
Oliver.
You can give yourself
if you go
to
Spotify
job, like,
or whatever right now and look up, you know, like Any Given Sunday playlist, you know, because sometimes people will make these playlists from a film, but they'll add in like, you know, about 20 other tracks that they like, even though they're not in the film. If you look up the Any Given Sunday playlist, you will find about 85 songs. I'm sure of it.
Any Given Sunday OST.
Yeah.
Okay. Who Are You Gonna Call by Missy Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
Never Gone Back by Mobb Deep. Soul Sunday, Goody Mob, Shut Him Down by LL Cool J. I'd say that probably was part of the contract. Any Given Sunday featuring Guru Uncommon by Jamie Foxx.
Which closes the film.
Whatever It Takes by POD. Fuck That by Kid Rock. Be a Man by Hole.
Don't forget Gary Glitter's in there. Rock and Roll Part 2.
Don't See Him. Why by Godsmack. Stompbox by Oversteer.
They just keep playing songs in this. I'm not kidding. Like if you haven't seen this movie, like, again, as Adam said, it just never stops moving. It's like, it's effect on top of effect. Like, it's as if like Oliver Stone like got After Effects and just went mental. And it's just non-stop tracks. Non-stop. There's Use Me Up by Bill Withers, you know, like, which is used quite well. There's even like Post-Rock by John Murphy playing under the famous speech scene. It's just, it's non-fucking-stop. It's so relentless.
Yeah.
And yeah, sorry, you mentioned Elvis there real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Which of course stars the actor Austin Butler.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw him on the screen yesterday in Dune Part 2.
Dune 2?
Dune 2.
Yeah. How was it?
It's good. I didn't love the first one.
Okay.
Have you seen the first one?
I have.
What do you think?
Sci-fi for me is like, I'm not into it, but
really?
I didn't hate it.
Okay, well that's, yeah, I wasn't mad, I love sci-fi, but I wasn't mad about this one. I rewatched it the night before, I thought it was slightly better than when I first saw it, but I went to see Dune Part 2. I liked it a lot by the end, I will say.
Okay.
As in, like, the last half an hour of it really got its hooks into me, and I was kind of like, okay, cool, give me the ticket for part three right now, because there will be a part three.
Fantastic.
They still don't finish the fucking story. They're like Cody Rhodes out there, not finishing the story.
Although it's looking like he's going to finish the story now, in a massive U-turn by the WWE.
Bloody well better, yeah. For the sake of Hugh Carr, former guest of the show, who's going to WrestleMania this year. As a puncher, not a wrestler.
imagine.
Wouldn't put it past
you. Care off the top ropes.
Swanton bomb into the ring. Dune Part 2. If you're going to go see it on the fucking gigantic screen with a huge sound system, because it is loud.
Is it in IMAX?
It's in IMAX.
It's
IMAX.
Yeah,
I went to see it in IMAX and like the sound system was rattling around me.
Nice.
But I would love to hear it. I just saw, and I'll bring it back to this so I don't stray off on too hard of a tangent. Someone just texted me there with like the Lighthouse Cinema are apparently going to be doing some 1999 movies.
Fantastic.
As part of the season, which they should be doing, but I hope they don't just pick the ones that they always pick. They're going to play The Talented Mr. Ripley. They're going to play Drop Dead Gorgeous. That's fine. Can you please, if you're listening, anyone from the Lighthouse Cinema, please, just one screening. That's all I need. Any Given Sunday. On the big screen. We'll all go.
That'd be fantastic.
We'll all go. Yeah.
It's a big no encore day out, everybody.
We won't have to do any drugs beforehand because it's all on the screen, baby.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to need something to calm you down. You won't need anything to get you up.
The popcorn is on me, for me, no one else. I'll be buying popcorn for myself, is what I'm trying to say. But yes, Right Here, Right Now by Fatboy Slim. I think it's a genuinely fantastic song.
Yeah. Also,
an artist I did not keep up with, by the way. I you know, eventually was like, okay, cool, I'm over that phase.
This
blah,
was the dropping off point, I think, for a lot of people, right?
In and out, really.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Well, he's still gigantic.
He's DJing, he's playing gigs. Like, I know that, like...
Like Three Arena?
Yeah. Regularly plays Three Arena and, like, draws a crowd of, you know, people of all ages. Like, the demographic is so wide for him. But as well, I think it should be mentioned, there was a couple of hits that I didn't go into on this one because it wasn't necessarily dialogue that was sampled. And the Prodigy do it so well. There's, like, one of the main samples in Breathe is, like, someone like swiping swords and like that's exactly it from again, it was a black and white kung fu movie from the 60s or something like that.
It's awesome,
absolutely fantastic.
When the Prodigy were at their peak, they're just the greatest.
That, like, Fat of the Land is easily, for me, one of the greatest albums of all time.
Generations right up there.
Fat of the Land was like my kind of discovery, my real discovery of the Prodigy, and that to me was it'll just always have that place in my heart. Even some of the stuff that came after, I quite liked Invaders Must Die. I really liked that album. It was at a very formative time in my life. It's probably a nostalgia tinge.
Tile Track's a bit of fun, I suppose.
I liked Stand Up, which featured, I believe, Dave Grohl on drums. That was the one that I remember specifically being enamored with from that record. But again,
also, should say as well in the same breath, RIP Keith Flint, 5 years gone as of this week.
Wow. Doesn't feel like that at all.
No. I remember where I was. I was literally heading over to London to go see Billie Eilish, and I wrote something on the plane on my phone and published it on Joe. Because, he was, you know, in a world where the word icon is overused, he genuinely was one.
Yeah, stood out, like, really, among his peers, was one of the... one of the biggest icons. Like, you know, I know that we talk on the podcast about the word icon being cheesy, but he was, and I'm glad that we have so much of him.
Yeah,
to still consume, you know.
Definitely,
and that's
definitely.
That's amazing. But yeah, rest in peace.
Absolutely. And on that note, an iconic man, an iconic song as well, this one Right Here, Right Now, of course. The film Strange Days, if you haven't seen it, I'd recommend it. Go check it out. And also, of course, with thanks once again to our guests this week, Luke and David from Overhead the Albatross. Go check out all of their music. Definitely check out the video as well for Your Last Breath. They put a lot of work into it, and you can tell, and it does, as Dave was saying, it is shot in incredible 8K.
8K.
It looks amazing. It looks absolutely amazing.
If you start buffering it today, you'll be able to watch it by, I don't know, Tuesday next week.
Probably, yeah. And lastly as well, by the time this podcast is out, the Choice Prize will be done and dusted. And I'll just say it real quick, days ahead of it in terms of us recording this. If Lancome don't win, I don't understand that. But we shall see.
Yeah, we will.
We shall see.
And we'll discuss it all.
We won't discuss it all because we'll be a week late to it.
Yeah,
so.
But why not?
Yeah, we'll see. But, you know, best luck to all involved. My name is Dave Hanratty. His name is Sonic Architect Adam. And this has been No Encore for the week. It's patreon.com/No Encore if you want to support the show. Please tell your friends about it. Spread the word. You know, go into the local shop and just scream the name. I'm sure they'll know what that means. And, good night. Goodbye. Take care. Good luck.